Welcome to the Mike Molloy Show. Peter Werbe sitting in for Mike. I'm Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E. You can go to my website, peterwerbe.com, find out all about me. Some of you, we go way back, just like I go way back with Mike Molloy. Mike and I began on the IE America Radio Network. That was a liberal network a little before its time. It was owned by the United Auto Workers, and he and I began broadcasting from the headquarters in Detroit. Or he was in Atlanta, I was here in Detroit. Mike, a little under the weather tonight. I talked to him in Atlanta, and he sounds kind of like the Godfather. He's got one of those things like that, one of these upper respiratory things. Hopefully, he will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, please join me, Peter Werbe, at 800-989-1480 on the Nova M Radio Network. You can go to novamradio.com. And, man, there's sickness all around. Chief Justice John Roberts has suffered a seizure at his home in Maine today, and he fell and did a little bit of damage to his face, but they say that he's okay, that he's fully recovered, according to a spokesperson for the Penobscot Bay Medical Center, where Roberts was taken. He was taken by ambulance to the medical center, underwent a thorough neurological evaluation, which revealed no cause for concern. I mean, that's kind of weird, isn't it? The guy has a seizure. That's the second he's had. He had another one like that in 1993 and couldn't drive for several months. Now, this is called, the doctors called this, a benign idiopathic seizure. And the White House described the January 1993 episode as a, quote, isolated idiosyncratic seizure. And what that essentially means, they don't know what caused it. They have no idea what it means, but there was no tumor, no stroke, or other explanation. And let's see, a benign seizure means that doctors performed an MRI and found out that there was nothing substantially wrong or demonstrably wrong, I guess you would say. But after two seizures, the likelihood of another at some point is greater than 60%. And apparently what that suggests is that he has epilepsy, so he's going to have to take anti-seizure medicine. You know, sometimes these things happen. You get like a bolt from the blue, and maybe, I don't know, could this switch him around instead of being this activist judge? I thought the Republicans didn't like activist judges. Remember that? Remember they were always railing against activist judges? Now you have a right-wing Supreme Court. And these were the guys that were saying they were going to, you know, Roberts and the other guy, Alito, that they were going to make decisions, make rulings, give their decisions based on precedent. And boom, man, they're overturning the integration, you know, they're overturning late-term abortion, they're overturning campaign finance law. So I best we can hope for, I mean, of course, we wish him good health, like I know all the right-wingers are wishing Mike Molloy good health that are listening, of course, and but that this has maybe an impact on Chief Justice John Roberts. We wish him well. We wish him a speedy recovery. And we hope that maybe that it, I don't know, that it affected the mean gene or something that these conservatives have, that they don't really care about other people, that the pathology that drives them towards greed and power and corruption and domination and militarism and all the rest of it, maybe the little stroke just poof. Just kind of pop that out of John Roberts' head. I know, not much of a chance, is it? Let's see. Oh, by the way, if you go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, you'll see a photograph of me and Mike Molloy together. Mike Molloy is a tough act to follow or to sit in his shoes. I'm a lot more mild-mannered, although I've actually stolen, you know, his signature line, you know, but have I told you tonight how much I hate these people. But there's something in the way that Mike Molloy says that is unduplicatable, isn't it? If you want to talk to me, it's 800-989-1480. It's universally recognized that the United States, under the lies and misleadership, the corruption and the venality of the Bush crime family, that the war in Iraq is lost, that it's a matter of how do we get out, which is no small problem when you have hundreds of millions of pounds of equipment there. And what are you going to do about it? You know, how are you going to get that all out and what have you? But the body count continues massively with the Iraqis by the dozens in the United States, tens of thousands of wounded Americans, none are, that are getting the proper care that they should, post-traumatic stress syndrome affecting so many men. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, we have Michael E. O'Hanlon and Kenneth M. Pollack, guys associated with the Brookings Institute. And they had an article, an op-ed piece, as they call it, in the New York Times today. You can still get it. Just go to nytimes.com. And it's a war we just might win. You know, one of the things that I always say, and I always advise my listeners here in Detroit when they're listening to my show, is that careful with your pronouns. And even your proper nouns, because when you say America or the United States or worse, we did not start a war in Iraq. We did not invade Iraq. We did not screw up the occupation. By the way, look for a documentary called No End in Sight. That's a documentary about the occupation and how badly it was botched. And interestingly, there's no anti-war people in it at all. It's all insiders. It's all the imperialists, those that supported the imperial invasion of Iraq, no matter that it was based on this totally on lies. But they're angry that it was so totally screwed up because of the nepotism and incompetence and ineptness of the Bush crime family. But here's just a little piece of it. I won't in nowhere read you the entire thing. O'Hanlon and Pollack write in today's New York Times, viewed from Iraq, where we just spent 8 days meeting with American and Iraqi military and civilian personnel, the political debate in Washington is surreal. The Bush administration has over 4 years lost essentially all credibility. Okay, we're on board with them so far, right? Yet now the administration's critics, in part as a result, seem unaware of the significant changes taking place. Here's the most important thing Americans need to understand, say O'Hanlon and Pollack. We are finally getting somewhere in Iraq. We. Now, who is that? Who is the we in here? The United States? Bushco, this racket posing as a government. That's who can succeed there. That's who can drive its popularity up again if it was to have a victory, which, of course, would be a victory for militarism, a victory for illegal wars, a victory for an illegal occupation. But they say we, or maybe he means, I don't think he means, they mean the two of them. We're finally getting somewhere in Iraq, at least in military terms. And of course, they're talking about our soldiers, the majority of who want to get out. Did you see that Iraq won the Asia soccer championship? The head of the team, the captain, says, they asked him if he'd like to say anything, and he said, yeah, I'd like to say I'd like the United States to get out of Iraq. So why are we there? The majority of Iraqi people want us out. The majority of the American people want us out. From the polls I've seen, the majority of Americans want us out. So it's only this criminal conspiracy occupying the White House that wants to continue. And we'll get into that a little bit more. Want to get your calls as well. 800-989-1480. Peter Werby sitting in for Mike Malloy. As two analysts who have harshly criticized the Bush administration's miserable handling of Iraq, again, that's their beef. Not that it was based on lies, based on deception, based on baseless contentions, but that the handling of it was miserable. They say we were surprised. They sure use we liberally, don't they? We were surprised by the gains we saw and the potential to produce not necessarily victory, but a sustainable stability that both we and the Iraqis could live with. And again, we meaning who? Who? The United States people? The families that are suffering the losses of their loved ones, the ones, the tens of thousands now that have suffered grievous injuries, that we could live with. And what does that mean? That the billion-dollar world's largest embassy the United States has set up completely with non-Iraqi labor is going to be operational? Is there in fact going to be 8 to 12 permanent military bases? Are they going to change the oil law? So that for the first time in a generation and a half, foreign oil companies can begin the process of recolonialization, that is, of a looting of the West, looting the riches of another country. Because remember, that's why Iraq came there, that's why England came there in the first place, to make it a colony. All right, we're going to take a break. Music coming up behind us. See, we already have some people waiting, and it's always my pleasure to talk to you. I'm going to bring up a couple of more points to this. But these two, O'Hanlon and Pollack, says Iraq may be a war we just might win. More on that when we come back on the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you on the Nova M Radio Network. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you, broadcasting at Nova M Radio. Mike out for the night, a little under the weather. We'll wish him well, and hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. Got one of those upper respiratory things. Didn't we used to just get that during the winter? What the hell has happened to our immune systems? By the way, I forgot to tell you, if you want to email me, this is either for the bashful or the frustrated, in case we get full phone lines. We don't right now, 800-989-1480. Here's one from Clint, listening in Dearborn, Michigan, one of my homies here. Twice in two nights, listening to you here at work in Dearborn. Enjoyed last night's show. So if you got some concise remarks, please send them along, and I'll see if I can read them. No producer here, so I'm like a one-man show. You know, some of these talk shows, they have like nine people working. It's me. Mike has Kathy, all right? Anyway, we were talking about this op-ed piece in the New York Times today, A War We Just Might Win, by Michael E. O'Hanlon and Kenneth M. Pollack. And they're saying, hey, things aren't going so bad. They say, we, I guess, what? Meaning, I'm not sure. Fill in the blank. Who are we here? You know, they always talk about this. This is, you know, I really strive for precision in language, something that's really got it eroded in recent years. You got to look, you know, to George Orwell, who spoke a lot about that. But he says, we are finally getting somewhere in Iraq. Well, ask Oxfam. That's the group that deals with world hunger. They say 75% of the population can't sustain itself. This, we might have to destroy a country to save it. Might be that's their perspective here. Because almost everyone says the war is lost. And I guess I've thought it's possible. It's possible. If we can mobilize, and this isn't clear we can do this, but if the United States under George W. Bush, that's a little more precise, if Bushco, the racket posing as a government, can mobilize enough military to go there and kill enough Iraqis, destroy enough of the infrastructure, and make them totally dependent on the United States to exhaust them in every way possible at the same time, experiencing thousands and thousands more casualties from our military, tens of thousands of more casualties of Iraqis, billions and billions more of our treasury, which, what is it, $12 billion a month for both wars? Yeah, maybe, quote, we could win, but at what price? And you've probably heard now that U.S. generals expect to need a large contingent of troops in Iraq until the middle of 2009. That's from the commander of U.S. forces in Iraq. Such a timeline, here's what's important, that of course was General David Petraeus, such a timeline would hand George W. Bush's successor the task of bringing U.S. forces home from Iraq more than 6 years after Bush dispatched them to topple Saddam Hussein. That is worth the major consideration, I would say, of the evening. Such a timeline, middle of 2009, when Hillary or Kucinich or whoever, Obama or Gore, you know, hey, Gore won once before. He could probably win again, right? He or she would be the president, and then it would be up to the Democratic president to withdraw the troops, and then if there is a terror attack, what would that all do? These people, have I told you tonight, I have to say this is a quote from Mike Malloy, how much I hate these people. This there has there ever been more Machiavellian, more evil people that have disgraced this country and our nation's history, I don't know. I mean, there's been bad stuff before. And, of course, O'Hanlon and Pollack say a war we just might win. On the other hand, we read in Editor and Publisher, one of the least covered aspects of the fallout from the Iraq War is the rising toll of suicide on the part of U.S. soldiers both near the battlefield and back home. Latest official figures released by the Pentagon reveal at least 116 self-inflicted fatalities in Iraq alone. Now, I wonder if that's counted in the battle deaths that goes up slowly. They don't even make any, you know. I have on my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. It's a sad business that I update it from time to time, you know, every few days. But you barely, you know, the fact that somebody's father or somebody's brother or son or daughter has caught it in Iraq, it doesn't make any ripples other than the people that are suffering the loss, right? Well, so that's what it's going to all be about, that after the billions have spent, and is this figure in your mind? In fact, in the documentary, No End in Sight, it gives the most reliable figure that this is all going to cost us, the U.S., not the U.S., us, you and me, and our children and our grandchildren, depending on how old you are. $2.1 trillion. And it's all gone to Bush's corrupt buddies in the war and reconstruction industries, hasn't it? All right, let's take a break, and I promise I'll get you on the air when we come back. Give us a call, 800-989-1480. I'm Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Peter Werbe subbing for Mike. Mike out a little under the weather. I'm broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan. Thanks for joining us. Number to get you on the air, and we're going to do it this segment, 800-989-1480. And just to reset what we've been talking about, first, the fact that Chief Justice John Roberts has suffered a seizure at his home in Maine today. Apparently, he's okay. It's what's called a benign idiopathic seizure. Had one in 1993 as well, and it suggests epilepsy, but there's nothing else apparently wrong with him. And Ari writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. You can reach me that way. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I said that maybe some incident like this would drive the mean gene out of this guy, because all these conservatives are so mean, aren't they? They're mean people. Anyway, Ari writes, great show. I was listening to to conservative radio's Laura Ingraham a couple of years ago when she was diagnosed with breast cancer. After coming out of the hospital and doing her show, it really seemed as though she had lost the mean gene. Ari says, I'm a physician in a hospital. Bush support is solely lacking among our docs, thank goodness. Anyways, it only took a few short shows before she was back to her hate-mongering right-wing lunacy. Sad. Still, I hope that Roberts is okay and pray that the mean gene was shaken up in the seizure, indeed. The other thing that I mentioned was an article that I read in the New York Times today, or was it yesterday? No, it's today. Michael O'Hanlon and Kenneth Pollack, who says a war we just might win. They're saying there's a possibility that the United States, that the Bush racket may in fact prevail. On the other hand, that from General David Petraeus, told ABC News, that we should expect, that is, we here, meaning you and I, the American public, ought to expect to have a large contingent of troops in Iraq until the middle of 2009. And I said that the key sentence in this story is, such a timeline would hand President George W. Bush's successor the task of bringing U.S. forces home from Iraq more than 6 years after Bush dispatched them to topple Saddam Hussein. Remember all those guys saying that it was going to be, you know, a few months at the most? But that's not the deal. They're going to hand President Clinton, or President Obama, or President Kucinich, or President Edwards, or hopefully President Gravel, a poison pill. Remember, that's what Daddy did to the first Clinton, the first President Clinton, with Somalia. Left him with that great little piece of miscalculation. All right. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show, 800-989-1480. Let's see if I can actually do this. I have to press my own buttons here. And, okay. Let's go to Eric. Eric's listening to KPOJ in Portland. Eric, hi. It's Peter Werbe. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I see two major problems I'd like to bring up, as well as two solutions, luckily.
Please.
First problem came, I saw, after the Greenwald film, Iraq for Sale.
Yeah, great film.
And that is how these people make their money. They make their money by spending more money, this cost-plus contract.
Sure.
So these contracts need to be renegotiated, and we need to ban war profiteering.
Well, as you know, that's been an item in U.S. history almost since the beginning of it, and now we're completely, I mean, it sounds like a cliche to say that this is a military-industrial complex, but it is in every regard. I mean, in fact, a little later I'll talk about these planned sales of armaments to Saudi Arabia, but no bid contracts, you know. It's Bush's buddies. And it doesn't matter how badly they are carried out. The billions are spent, right?
And if they spend $1 billion, they get reimbursed $1 billion plus some percent. If they spend $10 billion, they get reimbursed $10 billion plus an identical percent.
Right.
So their only incentive is to spend more. And the Greenwald film documents them destroying vast amounts of trucks because there's a scratch on the door, because they'll be reimbursed plus a percent. But the other problem I see is an even more sinister one, unfortunately.
Wait, let me just comment and say, when I say, sometimes people say, "Oh, Peter, you know, you don't have this objective delivery. You say all these very, you know, like emotive, emotional things, like that Bush, the Bush Co. is a racket." I mean, what you described is exactly a racket, isn't it?
Well, it definitely is. And the second point actually comes with the quote, "War is a racket." 1 week ago, the BBC put out an audio documentary about the coup in 1934.
1933, and this had the footprint of Prescott Bush. So Bush essentially, and they were talking about creating a fascist coup because they were admirers. Prescott Bush and all these industrialists were admirers of Mussolini.
Well, it came very close, according to the documentary that the BBC has on the Radio 4 program Document.
Right.
That's available from July 23rd.
Well, let me tell you an easier and self-serving way, although I'm not getting anything out of my website. It's on my website, right on the front page. It's Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. It's an absolutely astounding and startling documentary. And how do we know that this type of cabal is not going on now? Why aren't these guys in the Republican Party a little more worried about what's happening to them? I mean, one thing, they're all going to get pardoned no matter what they do. Gonzalez can lie his butt off, and he knows that Bush on the way out is going to say, "You're pardoned."
I'm concerned that one reason they're not worried is because they don't need to find someone to raise them an army of veterans anymore, because some of these contractors that we have legally around are called private security forces, and 150 of which were used on American soil during Hurricane Katrina.
You're right.
I'm concerned that they have an army at their disposal. Should the military-industrial complex ever want to take over, all they need do is hire Kellogg, Brown & Root, Blackwater. And according to my brother-in-law, who just got back from Iraq a few days ago, dozens of other smaller private security companies from places like Venezuela, Uganda, and other former paramilitaries from South America. This problem is big.
It is big. And you know, Eric, the majority of American people have no idea about this. There is a small core of people, people like yourself, that takes responsibility of citizenship extraordinarily, in an extraordinarily important way, and educates themselves. But all of this stuff is unfortunately much below the radar. Thanks for bringing it all up.
One last point, if I may, and that is when Greenwald and the author of the book Blackwater, Jeremy Scahill, testified before Congress, Jeremy Scahill brought up a point that South Africa had passed anti-mercenary legislation, and I feel as though we definitely also need to talk to our congressmen to pass anti-mercenary legislation before these mercenary armies get out of hand.
You got it. Thank you, Eric. Thanks for joining me on the Mike Valois Show. And let's go to Victor. Victor is in my... Oh, what? Oh, man. I pressed the wrong button. I'm just getting used to this system here. Let me see if we can get our... when he calls back, we'll get him right on the air. Sorry about that. And I almost did it again. Here is John listening to Sirius in Fort Myers. John, hi. It's Peter Werby on the Mike Valois Show.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Doing good.
Real quick, you know, I'm a big fan of progressive radio and listening to a lot of the hosts on progressive radio. You are pretty out there, pretty far left, using terms like criminal and the crime, push crime family, and using terms like a racket. And I couldn't agree more personally. But my question to you is, if this is true, you know, Bush will come out with his Bush administration and say, we're there, so we don't have to fight them here, and Iraq is the center of the war on terror, and we have to win, losing isn't an option. You know, if that's not the case, and this really is a conspiracy, if this is really Machiavelli, if this is really a crime family for oil interests, for war profiteering, for big business, my question to you is, how do people like yourself, very smart, very emotional, as you say, how do we get people like you not to appear left or left-wing wackos or people who would be not taking, you know, Gravel is a
perfect example. Okay, wait. I got the point. First off, the man that I'm substituting for, Mike Malloy, I've taken some of his language about the Bush crime family and what have you, and people always see me as kind of the calmer version of Mike. So,
big fan of Mike. I'm with you.
Okay. So I don't know. I mean, maybe this kind of programming isn't 100% for people. Like some people have said, told me that I should be more and have told Mike that we ought to be more like the people on NPR. And I'm thinking, there is an NPR. And they are, you know, they have their particular style, and which bores me and puts me to sleep. I think one of the things, I mean, think how much information Eric had. And if you put together, I mean, right-wing audiences, they don't bring anything to the shows. They don't know anything. They use the right-wing hosts to give them permission to continue the stupidities that they believe in, and to give them the explanations of why they always have to submit to authority and never challenge things as they are. You add up this audience here on liberal or progressive or left-wing radio, and you guys know more than any of the hosts. I can't keep track of all this stuff. And in many ways, what this is kind of a community forum and sort of a grievance session. Now, what I want to do, of course, is take these grievances, take these gripes, and turn this into action, because it's always been the people mobilized around either getting rid of something like the king or segregation or organizing something positive or the vote for women or against the war. We can do it. So we got to.
How did you do it? Is it being a radical or revolutionary and trying to push your points that way? Or is it trying to stand a little bit more centrist and objective
and trying to influence action
that way?
I got to take a break. Let's leave that as the question for the audience. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. Answer his question, 800-989-1480. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Mike Valois Show, Peter Werby sitting in for Mike, broadcasting from Detroit, Michigan on the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number, 800-989-1480. We're talking, big surprise, right, about Iraq. and these two analysts who say that maybe we can win it, right? And talking a little about who are we. Now, Alicia, who's listening on the Quake in San Francisco, she writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Hi, Peter. In Spanish, there's a saying, nosotros somos muchos, which translates to, you're including too many of us in your use of the word we, or we didn't agree to be included in your definition of we. And that's it. So I guess what I was saying is, be careful when you hear this, when people are saying America or United States or worse, we didn't agree to this. And we, the actual real we, all of the we's involved in Iraq want to get the hell out. All right, let's bring on the air Preston. He's listening on the Internet in Denver, Colorado. Hey, it's Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy.
Hey, Peter.
Hi.
I was wondering regarding Chief Justice Roberts. I wonder if maybe he'll start using medical marijuana to control his seizures. And
there you go.
Maybe we'll get this war on non-corporate drugs repealed.
And then also, right, maybe that'll take away the mean gene that conservatives have.
Maybe. And hopefully it's not a gene. I think it's mostly learned. You know, they read these books by these people like Victor Davis Hanson, and they listen to Hugh Hewitt and all these advocates, these masters of war.
Right.
And as their caller pointed out, has a lot to do with business interests. There's another documentary called Why We Fight, which features the words of Dwight Eisenhower.
That's excellent. In fact, much of it is all contained. What we need to know, the fact that this is just a corporate enterprise with it, that used to dish out a little bit for the citizens, that now it's just full-bore military-industrial complex, yeah. Or a military state.
That's right.
Yeah.
And your earlier caller has a legitimate concern. You know, maybe that kind of language turns people off. But I think it has a utility as well, and I think it's important for us to remind them that as radical as we may sound at times, we're simply saying things that Thomas Jefferson and Eisenhower and General Smedley Butler and FDR were talking about as well.
Let me just tell you a real quick story about me and Mike Malloy. We both started on the old IE America radio network in 2000, and we each had 14 stations. By 2003, I had two and he had one. I mean, and I was envious. I said, how the hell could I still have, one more than him? And what happened was that Mike and I would call Bush, the Bush crime family, he would. I stole that from him. I called it Bush Co. We would say, imagine this. We'd say, Bush is lying. And we'd lose an affiliate because now you pick up the New York Times and they're saying it in their lead editorials. So the language sometimes, I mean, think about John Brown. Think about what he said. Think about what John Brown, what he did. He's considered a wild-eyed radical fanatic because he took up arms against slavery. People said, this guy is too radical.
Yep.
A year or so later, we're including my great-great-grandfather. I got 500,000 people going south to do what John Brown did.
Yeah.
I'm not advocating violence.
I hear what you're saying, but one last comment on Pollack. I think it's important to keep in mind that Kenneth Pollack wrote a book called Threatening Storm, The Case for Invading Iraq. So he was another one of these advocates of war. So for him to put this kind of spin on the catastrophe that's going on there is to be expected. He's, there are these PR groups like the Rendon Group that helped push this war. And simply to stop it, we hear a lot about manufacturing consent. You know, Noam Chomsky
Sure.
made that term phrase famous, Alex Carey as well. Simply what we need to do in response is withdraw consent. You know, that's the radical thing, and I don't know if it's radical revolution, but I think it's a sort of evolution. I mean, evolution is not just an argument that Darwin had, 100 years ago. Evolution can be very much something in the here and now that we can push for if we believe in it.
Yeah, and in this article by Michael O'Hanlon and Kenneth Pollack, I mean, they're saying, as two analysts who have harshly criticized the Bush administration's miserable handling of Iraq, but that goes back to that movie, that documentary that is just coming out now, No End in Sight. They're not critical of the invasion. They're critical of the occupation. They wanted to quickly secure that for American mm-hmm. oil interests and for imperial forward positions in the mm-hmm. Middle East to control all of the politics there. And, yeah, we ought to get the hell out of the Middle East, period.
Have you seen the website oilcrashmovie.com?
I may have it on my website.
Well,
I got so much on
okay.
it. It's the
if
junkiest.
You get a chance, oilcrashmovie.com, and that's another source for, you know, it's not just left-wingers who are saying we need a progressive change in the society. It's people like former CIA chief James Woolsey and Republican Representative Roscoe Bartlett in Maryland saying this oil economy is unsustainable, it's an environmental mess, and we need to start a transition away from this fossil fuel cartel to a more sustainable way of life.
Thank you, Preston.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. It's 800-989-1480. I think rather than going take another call and only getting you on for 30 seconds, Gunner and Rich and Tony and Frank, please stay with us. It takes a little bit of patience. I'm Peter Werbe. I'm hosting this for Mike Malloy, who's a little under the weather. When we come back, I want to talk a little about the price of oil and how it relates to the war in Iraq and how it relates to the military-industrial complex. Because, you know, that this has just become another one of those proper nouns that we know. We know that all the big firms that that supply the military make billions of dollars, but how integral it is and how it it affects everything that we can imagine, from the lack of health care to what's how our tax money is expended. Why is the state of Michigan, where I live, why is it in debt so many tens of millions of dollars? Why is the city of Detroit not able to pay its bills when we have these hundreds of billions of dollars floating around that we can make war with? All right, more on that and your calls at 800-989-1480. Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. Be right back. Welcome back to the second hour of the Mike Malloy Show. If you're just joining us, I'm Peter Werbe here in Detroit, Michigan, sitting in for Mike. Mike, under the weather, I don't know if you heard him on Friday, sounded a little bit like the Godfather, one of those upper respiratory things. And I said in the first hour, didn't we used to just get this stuff in the winter? What is going on here? Well, you're listening to the Nova M Radio Network, and you can call us at 800-989-1480. Our friends in Phoenix are picking up the calls. I'm talking to you from Detroit. Like to hear from you. And we've been going around with this essay that appeared in the New York Times today, A War We Just Might Win. We've talked a little about the meaning of the pronoun. And Michael O'Hanlon and Kenneth Pollack write that we are finally getting somewhere in Iraq, at least in military terms. How many times before have we heard this? And what I said as well, the important point of this all is contained in another story that quotes General David Petraeus. That a large contingent of troops are going to be necessary. U.S. troops are going to be necessary in Iraq until the middle of 2009. Such a timeline would hand President George W. Bush's successor the task of bringing U.S. forces home from Iraq. Now, many of us very suspicious of 9/11 have growing suspicions of, is there going to be an incident before the 2008 elections? And what would that entail? And what would that create? And what would that allow George W. Bush to carry out, in that he has created a presidential directive in which he identifies a natural catastrophe and he assumes responsibility for the continuation of constitutional government with himself at the head? Last time I heard, this is a dictatorship. As we know, as almost everyone who listens to Nova M Radio understands, we are moving farther and farther away from constitutional rule, constitutional law. And there is little done by the populace itself. Now, a lot of us are involved in the peace and social justice movement. We're out there for the demonstrations. We're involved in the ACLU. We're involved in our number of local groups, our unions, our churches, just groups that we've formed together to bring some resistance to what's going on. And it's disheartening in many ways because, you know, people say, well, you know, the average person isn't sacrificing. Well, the average person is sacrificing. A lot of it, of course, is economic. And that's why if you can't, I mean, the whole thing should be sold on an ethical basis. These are horrible, evil people that have control of our country and of the world. They have us by the throat, and we've got to do more. Or let's do a different analogy. They have a boot on our throat, and we've got to start reaching for that ankle and flip this person off of us. We have to have a vision of what we want, and we have to move towards it. We're not going to get what we want by depending on people in Congress or even a new president. I mean, we talk fancifully, many of us on the left, about Kucinich or Gravel or someone like that. But it's not going to be. If it's going to be a Democratic president, it's going to be another mainstream Democrat that's going to move a little bit to the left of center and maybe undo some of the extraordinary damage that George W. Bush has done. Let me give you an idea about that. If you go back 10 years, and you talk to a Clinton-hating Republican, and you said, what's wrong with Bill Clinton? Well, he would, I don't know, remember, well, I can't remember all this stuff, Watergate and Travelgate, and Hillary tried to put in socialized medicine, and if they're really wacky, they would say, you know, that they murdered Vince Foster, and they'd finish on one hand, and then they would get to their other hand, and they would start naming things a little more slowly. Right? There wasn't a lot of things, and I doubt if they would ever get beyond. This is like an arch conservative 10 years ago telling you what's wrong with Bill Clinton. They'd probably get 8 or 9 complaints about Clinton. There is a website called 1000reasons.org, 1000reasons.org, and you got it. It began with chronicling the Bush crimes against constitutional government, the rollback of what we and our fathers and our grandfathers and even our grandfathers fought to stop the rapaciousness of industry and government, corporations and business and whatever else. Because governments are always out of control. Governments are pretty nasty things. They in themselves are normally rackets. Rackets for the rich. I mean, that's why they arose 4,000 years ago, 5,000 years ago to begin with. And in a few instances, people have been able to, and again, precision here, the people have been able to gain control, at least of aspects of government, to make it work for those that are being ruled. Mainly, governments are set up for the rulers. And what's happened under Bushko, this racket disguised or posing as a government, is that it's returned to classic government, a pure racket for the rulers and who they represent, the ultra-wealthy, the corporations, the military. And plus, what goes with it is this enormous amount of pathology. I mean, these people are truly mad. You understand that. I mean, they look kind of sane. They got suits on, they got uniforms on, they're on television. You think they couldn't be completely crazy. But when you start looking behind them and you understand the hypocrisy and all this, you know, sexual scandals they're involved in and all of that and all the corruption, you know they're a pack of whack jobs. And I'm not trying to say that there's nobody on the left or there's nobody on the, you know, in the Democratic Party that hasn't done some pretty goofy things or hasn't been caught in corruption. But it's endemic to conservatives. It's endemic to the right. And ultimately, it's because it's about authoritarian personalities, about fascist personalities. That's the only kind of personality that could submit to what's going on. Because the human social biology is about a communal society where people are family. And they, oh, yeah, man. In fact, I don't know. I'll get to that in a little while. Rudolph Giuliani, I can never even say mention this guy without laughing. But his latest charge is that liberals want a nanny state. But I'm getting pretty far afield. Let me get some of your calls here. Frank's in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's been waiting quite a while. Frank, hi, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, how's it going?
Going great.
Well, anyways, what I wanted to say was that guy, the one who called a few times ago, you know, saying stuff about whatever, about, you know, that why you're talking about Bush and Cheney and whoever. But if you read the CIA report about the aluminum tubes and the way that they said that how they were going to use those tubes for centrifuging, it's impossible to make those tubes to machine them into a centrifuge tube. And right. They never even tried it, because if they would have tried it, they would have found out it would have been impossible to do.
Well, I'll tell you what, Frank, I don't think that there's very many people, even among the neoconservatives, the neocon, the guys that gave us the con job, that still believe that there's anything that approaches the truth of why Bush got us into Iraq. All right, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. Here is Gunner. Gunner is listening. Oh, man, I did that again. I clicked him off the air instead of putting him on the air. Gunner, I'm sorry, man. Call us back at 800-989-1480. All right. I understand. The one that's red is not the one you press. All right. Rich is in New Jersey. He's listening on the Internet. Rich, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Hi.
Listen, I generally agree with everything you've been talking about tonight, except for I don't understand why you're so hot on Gravel. I know you did a great thing with the Pentagon Papers, but his tax. You need to take a look at his tax proposals. They're off the wall. Okay?
Are they? Tell me.
Well, he wants to propose a national sales taxes.
Oh, that's terrible. I agree. No flat taxes at all.
Right, exactly. All right. So getting back to what you were talking about, that sounds really good. I want to address your callers. The time for worrying and playing what if with this administration is over. I heard a lot of liberals or progressives today on the radio crying during Jeff Farrier's show about, well, if Gonzalez resigns, Bush is going to put in an interim appointment and it may even be worse. Well, the bottom line is we want to get the people right now out.
Right.
And worry about later what's going to come down the pike. We got to fight the battles as they arise. And what you're saying about impeachment or any kind of forward movement by the people with this government is going to have to come from the grassroots. There's no two ways about it.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you again, that sounds like, you know, talking about impeachment sounds like it's something, you know, pretty radical. But the New York Times, let me see, what is that, yesterday said Democratic lawmakers are asking for a special prosecutor to look into Mr. Gonzalez's words and deeds. Solicitor General Paul Clement has a last chance to show that the Justice Department is still minimally functional by fulfilling that request. The New York Times says if that does not happen, Congress should impeach Mr. Gonzalez.
And that means that your congressman out there in Detroit, Conyers, has got to do his job with the Judiciary Committee. There are already solid grounds now, no matter what he says to Cindy Sheehan, like he said her last Monday, that he wants a political solution. Let's have a new election, get Democrats to control 2008. Funny how when the Democrats weren't in power, he was for impeachment.
Right. Yeah, it's actually very disappointing, but he's being leaned on, I'm sure, by Nancy Pelosi, and they have a conservative strategy that they hope is going to hand them the White House. I'm sure they believe that, so again, this is about political strategy. This is not about the constitutional process that is being so terribly eroded by everybody in the Bush administration, and that people can lie and get away with it. Look, it would probably be better for the Democratic Party fortunes if somebody like Rumsfeld was still in there, right? Or the guy that was putting up the different security alerts. What was it, Tommy, whatever the hell, I can't remember who it was. But, you know, we the idea that we can force these political monsters out of office should embolden us. And we need to drive George Bush and Dick Cheney out of office. But is that going to happen? I don't know. All right. Thank you for joining us. I appreciate that. And, oh, Gunner is back with us. Thank you for your patience. While I learn this system here, I'm sure the folks in Phoenix that are handling the calls are tearing their hair. Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. All right. 800-989-1480. This is the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werby, broadcasting from Detroit in Mike's absence. And give us a call. We'll get you on the air when we come back.
Oh,
Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werby broadcasting from Detroit. Sitting in for Mike. You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. And I've all of my talk show career, I've tried to run an orderly show, and I'm giving up. I mean, I can't do it. I am too ADD to begin with. That's why I'm in this business. And so you're just going to have to kind of follow the bouncing ball. If you're just joining us, you'll figure it out. One of the things we were talking about, though, was the use of the pronoun we, title of an essay in today's New York Times by Michael O'Hanlon and Kenneth Pollack, A War We Just Might Win. They're saying there's some possibility that the United States, or we, as they call it, might win. And we've kind of gone through that. Doesn't look like there's great possibility other than it is that policy that's been called, kill all, burn all, loot all, you know. And actually, eventually, it's about that. I mean, that's what this war is about, looting. That eventually the United States corporations are being set up to loot the Middle East, as has been done for so long. Which would bring me, if I had some order here on my console, to one of the things I wanted to talk about. You know what? Let me do this. This is too long. Let me talk about it after our next break. But Michael writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He's talking about National Public Radio. In the lead up to the war here in Detroit, we, my friends and I, using the pronoun correctly here, we referred to NPR as Nationalistic Pentagon Radio or something else like a National Puppet Radio. Anyway, NPR says we invaded Iraq, and Michael says I'm not in there. We Bush invaded Iraq with his publicly funded band of mercenaries. The U.S. military cost free, by the way. Well. It sure has cost us a lot. Come on. The dumbasses in the public and military thought and mostly still think that we are liberating Iraq. NPR refuses to call torture torture. They call it torture abuse. I can't say that word, Michael, on the air. All right. Let's go back to our phones here, and let's get Gunner, because I did Gunner in. Gunner's listening on Sirius in Long Beach, California. Hi, Gunner. My apologies for cutting you off. I'm new to this.
Peter, I heard a click and I turned the radio back up just long enough to hear your apology, so I accept. And, it's such an important point that I really wanted to call back about the article of, like, Pollack and friends. You know, my point is that, we are not in this war to win, and there's no way for us to win. And just to illustrate my point, I mean, obviously, like, what's the last war that we won, that you can think of that we won?
I think it was, World War II.
Exactly. Countries who invade other countries are not in it to win a war. They're there to secure resources, to occupy, to suppress, or what have you. The only side in a war that can win a war is the side that is repelling or defending their country. I don't like to use the Hitler analogy because it turns people off, but how could Hitler have won the war? Hitler wasn't in it to win a war. He was in it to occupy and suppress and permanently dominate.
Right, sure.
And that is such a huge point, because as long as politicians and whomever talks about how can we win and how can, it's a total fallacy. It's a totally bogus premise that we can never argue correctly.
Well, if I could keep everything straight on my console, I would have so many good facts in my hands. But, of course, it's the expenditure of all this money. People say we've lost $500 billion so far. Well, that we is correct. We, the American people, have lost $500 billion. It could have gone to any other things. Like, let's scratch our heads. Can we think of anything we could have used that $500 billion of our tax money for? Like a national health program? Like free college? Like a free postal system? Like a decent rail system? Yeah. Gunner, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time to call back. If you want to call in, it's 800-989-1480. You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. Stick around. We got a lot more, and we'll get to your calls next. I want to talk a little about how much a gallon of gas really costs because of the war in Iraq and our involvement in the Middle East. I don't even know whether to interrupt this or not. I love canned heat. Peter Werbe here with you on the Mike Malloy Show on the NovaM Radio Network. Call in number 800-989-1480. We're kicking around a lot of subjects, and one of them is, and we talk about this frequently, and this is not particularly a new subject, and that is the cost of these wars that Bushco has involved us in. Us, you and I, we, because they're expending our dollar. It's this massive looting. It's this transfer of wealth. You and I create the wealth at work. When we go into a shop, when we go into an office, when we go into a store, wherever we're working, and we work, and we get compensated partly back for the wealth that we've produced in terms of our salary. That's about 80% of us, at least. And then we get taxes taken out. Well, it depends. I mean, you know, if you're just middle class, you get a lot taken out. If you're ultra wealthy, you don't get very much taken out at all. But this then is transferred. Our money is transferred through the government, and not much of it is a lot of it is accounting. A lot of it is, you know, the old thing about liars, or figures don't lie, but liars can figure. So it depends on who's doing the accounting. But no matter how you slice the bread, hundreds of billions of dollars are going to the military. So where does that go through? It goes through these companies that provide the wherewithal for making wars. And it also goes to companies that rebuild all the mess that wars have created. So you have like the Carlyle Group that has all these armament sectors in it. And in part, George Bush Sr. Is he still in? I think, you know, some of you out there, you know all this stuff, gold. But he's either involved in it or was for a great amount of time. So then they provide all these weapons. They destroy this country, Iraq, that has done absolutely nothing to us. It posed no threat either to us or to the region. Nobody, you think about that? Bush started saying at about the time that they were doing the run-up to the war in late 2002 and early 2003 that Iraq constituted a threat to the region. Well, interestingly, there wasn't a single country in the region that said, yeah, you're right. Yeah, we're really worried. You know, we don't know what Iraq's going to do. They're crazy. Well, they didn't say that because they knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction there. And they knew that Iraq had an army of dust. They didn't have anything. They couldn't do anything. They represented a threat to absolutely no one. So we go in there. We destroy everything. It's the, it's the kill all, burn all, loot all strategy. Then we've got it. We, and I'm using we purposely here and precisely here because that's who's footing the bill. Whenever you hear anything, when you hear billions, when you hear millions, when you hear hundreds of thousands, when you hear $2.1 trillion that the war in Iraq is going to wind up costing us, we are footing the bill. And that's why it's a racket. It is a mechanism set up to fleece the people that are under its control, under its rule. We are the ruled, they are the rulers. Now, that doesn't sound a lot like democracy to me, does it? Well, here's what goes on. And it doesn't matter what happens, by the way. It doesn't matter whether the United States or Bush or we, however you want to cut it, wins or loses. All this money is spent, and that's what it's all about, taking our money and giving it to their buddies, their corporate sponsors. And I know there's a lot in it that's pathological because, as I said earlier, they're truly mad. They are out of their minds. And they look, you know, they kind of have that appearance of great self-confidence. And it's what's born of wealth and privilege and never having to pay the cost. Can you imagine you screwing up any project, any business, any employment that you've been involved in to the extent that Bush and the rest of these fools have and still having a job? Now you say, well, they got rid of Rumsfeld. Yeah, he's really hurting now, isn't he? And every one of these guys that lied to the and caused the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and Americans, no matter what happens to them, no matter what crimes that they're guilty of, Bush on the way out is going to say, you know, you're all pardoned. So that's why they don't care. Yeah. Yeah, you know, $200,000 Scooter, yeah, here. You know, he whips it out of his pocket, pay the fine. Gonzalez lying his butt off, and you go, whoa, he might get indicted. Yeah, so what? What happened after the first Bush criminal regime, right? That Papa Bush, Poppy Bush on the way out just pardoned everybody. All right, here, this article. As U.S. rebuilds, Iraq won't act on finished work. What the hell does that mean, right? Iraq's national government is refusing to take possession of thousands of American finance reconstruction projects, forcing the United States either to hand them over to local Iraqis who often lack the proper training and resources to keep the projects running, or commit new money to an effort that has already consumed billions of taxpayer dollars. All right, they really got it that time. So there's been almost 3,000 completed projects costing $5.8 billion, and by the spring of this year, the Iraq national government has accepted only 435 of these. Now, here's what's going on. United States often, and again, this is incorrect language by the New York Times. It should be Bushco. These liars in the Bush regime often promote the number of rebuilding projects like power plants and hospitals that have been completed in Iraq, citing them as signs of progress in a nation otherwise fraught with violence and political stalemate. But closer examination by the Inspector General's office, headed by Stuart W. Bowen Jr., has found that a number of individual projects are crumbling, abandoned, or otherwise inoperative only months after, and I'm going to put my own wording in here, the Bush racket declared that they've been successfully completed. The United States always intended to hand over projects to the Iraqi government when they were completed. And I wrote in the margin here, there goes our national health care program. Right. I mean, think about what we could do with just, you know, here it's $12 billion a month now, right? And that's $144 billion a year. Now, think what we could do with that. I mean, let's say we even leave the tax structure in place, which I don't support for a minute. I mean, I'm all for confiscatory taxes. And if what's that word? Confiscating the huge amount of concentrated wealth in the hands of the top 1%. That you can have the kind of thing that was under Eisenhower. Why the hell did Kennedy change this, on, you know, the government under Kennedy? So you can have, you know, people say, you sound like a commie. That's what they tell me on my Detroit show. You sound like a commie. And I go, I do? For one thing, I'm much more radical than that. But forgetting that is, I say, after $10 million, you have 90% tax on income, right? So that's really commies, right? You leave people with only $10 million a year income. Well, what that means is we could probably have a $50,000 tax deduction right off the bat. In other words, everybody gets a $50,000 tax deduction. And the wealthy make, and the corporations who are scamming by without doing, you know, without paying their fair share of taxes and are heavily subsidized. That will get to the Giuliani that we want a nanny state statement in just a little while. Heavily subsidized by you and I. So they're getting a free ride. Everybody gets a free ride except for the working man and woman, the middle class and the working class. We don't get a free ride. We pay it all. They loot it all from us. They turn it over to their corporate buddies. It's as simple as that. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show, NovaM Radio Network. Our call-in number is 800-989-1480. And let's go to Bill. Bill is listening to KQKE Cupertino. Let me try that again. KQKE in Cupertino, California. I'm a Midwesterner, Bill. Excuse me for fumbling all that. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Peter. Boy, I agree with everything that you're saying. The thing that I wrestle with is what to do. And a caller earlier on my when I was driving home was talking about that. And I just wanted to share something that I thought of that others might be willing to do.
Sure, go ahead.
When I heard that Cindy Sheehan was going to run against Nancy Pelosi, unless Pelosi started, you know, moving impeachment for onto the table and contempt charges against Gonzalez or perjury and, you know, the kind of things that are just slam dunk in the bag,
sure,
that she was going to run. And so I sent her an email and said that if you wind up running, I pledge $1,000 to your campaign. And then I called Nancy Pelosi's office and got one of her staff and told them that that's what I had done. They were, I could tell they weren't very pleased.
No, I could imagine.
But, you know, if people would do that, okay, that sends a real message to the leadership in the Democrats and might get something going rather quickly. On the other hand, I must confess that, you know, my real fear is that Bush isn't going to resign, that there will be an event between now and the elections and that he will completely take over the government. I do not believe that we know even close to what happened leading up to and during 9/11. And 9/11 is the excuse for everything, you know, yeah, torture and whatever. So, in that respect, I'm, you know, very fearful. But we've got to get the ball moving here, and I haven't figured out any other way to do something that might help.
I'll tell you, Bill, a lot of what moves them is the money. And just think, you don't even really have to pledge it. You could just call them and say to your local Democratic party member, and just say, hey, I'm pledging $1,000 to the Green Party because you just ain't carrying the water necessary to support constitutional government. Thank you, Bill. It's a good idea. Let's keep the ideas going. Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy. We'll take a short break, and then we'll be back at your calls. The call-in number, 800-989-1480. You're listening to Nova M Radio. Stick around, and we'll be right back. Listen to the music here. Yeah, hey, it's Nova M Radio Network. Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy. Our call-in number, 800-989-1480. Tough Enough. Is that Stevie Ray Vaughan or Jimmy Vaughan? It's the Fabulous Thunderbirds. You're right. Sorry. Okay. I don't know. I just cut my classic rock throat. Never mind. We're not here for that. Where's the talk show? Give us a call. 800-989-1480. Let me do it. I'm giving you my Detroit number, 800-989-1480, and I have an email address as well, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Captain Mary writes in, the co-equality of our branches of government has been destroyed, which will destroy America unless we, the people, assert ourselves. And let's assume it's she, and she says, the only peaceful solution now seems to be a general strike. Don't go to work. Don't consume. Don't use the utility grid. Don't hurt anybody. I love it. Eat and drink only what you've stored. And there's something to be said about the old general strike tactic. But when you look back in American history, during the 30s it was used. There was general strikes in Toledo and Seattle, certainly often in Europe. In fact, massive general strikes just in the last few years that brought down evil governments. Can we do it here? We've got to be a lot more organized, don't we? All right, I got to get back to our screen right here. Let me see if I got. Yeah, we do. All right, let's go out to Ron. Ron's listening on KSAC in Sacramento. Ron, hi, it's Peter Werbe for Mike Malloy. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Doing great.
You ever go fishing in Lake Huron for salmon?
I have.
Wow, that must have been fun.
Well, I never caught any.
Well, that's good, too. Hey, I was going to talk about Pat Tillman. You know, there's been new evidence come out there. Apparently, his doctor that did the autopsy came up and said, we need to have a criminal investigation here. These guys unloaded on him from 10 yards out. They burned his body armor and his uniform and his diary within 24 hours. They put 3 rounds from M16 right in his forehead.
Right. They were very, very – the shots were very, very close together in his forehead. You're right.
Well, I mean, that's – I mean – I can't tell you. You say how much you hate these people. Remember Yoda says fear, anger, hate, suffering. So we want to get into words like intensely dislike. These guys are such world class criminals. If we can't remediate this through the judicial system, we're just going to have to think about how the Nicaraguans remediated their situation. They went down to Argentina and took care of business. If these guys are going to get away with the kind of crimes that they're getting away with just blatantly right out in front of everybody, like for instance, murdering Pat Tillman, a celebrity soldier, a three-star general, 70 times as he can't recall what happened, and then takes the Fifth Amendment to protect his own rights.
Absolutely amazing.
I mean, you know, what are they thinking? Well, just look at 9/11. All the conditions of a controlled demolition are met. They tell Zelikov, listen, don't let the King Commission even consider controlled demolition or U.S. Air Force exercises. Rumming and Cheney were running.
I don't know if we are ever going to get to the bottom of that. I mean,
We are. The 9/11 Truth Alliance and the Internet makes the difference. If we'd have known what U.S. Attorney Mark Lane had put together, that he actually had Hunt, one of the people involved in Kennedy's assassination, and that George Herbert Walker Bush was found in Dealey Plaza. He's always said he doesn't remember where he was, but that's where he was the day Jack Kennedy was killed.
Wait a minute. Everybody over 50 knows where they were on November 22nd, 1963. Mark Lane, the researcher who did Rush to Judgment, did the first investigation into the Kennedy assassination. And to think about it, they are still debating it this many years after. Ron, thank you so much. I got to get some more calls. Thank you. In fact, we were just talking during the break, myself and folks in Phoenix. Where do we stop, or do we? I mean, I guess the Kennedy assassination still fascinates me. When was it? 1963, so I can't even do the math on it. 35 years or something like that. Are we going to be talking about 9/11 35 years from now? Still not being able to get to the bottom of it? By the way, if you want to see a lot of assembled, Ron was going through some websites kind of quickly. My website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, WERBE, PeterWerbe.com, has a number of the things we've been talking about tonight, including the BBC, a link to the BBC radio documentary about the involvement of Prescott Bush in a potential fascist coup way back in 1933. But there's also, if you go down the left side on my website, there is a there's a link. There's the famous New York Daily News headline with a photograph of Bush and the words "Bush knew." I mean, that's pretty ominous, isn't it? But let's see. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff is listening on the internet in Los Angeles. Tell me quick, Jeff. We're almost out of time.
Yeah, very quickly. I sort of understood that you maybe thought favorably of Mike Gravel. And if I heard that correctly, I don't want to put words in your mouth, I would counsel you to have a long talk with Mike, because Mike had him on his show for an unprecedented hour and a half, and Gravel did not acquit himself very well. His tax policies, I honestly forget whether he was in favor of a flat tax or a sales tax, a national sales tax, but whatever it was, and I apologize, I can't remember, he was just nuts on taxes. And so I think I would recommend that you talk to Mike, have a long talk with him.
I love to have long talks with Mike, but I think more than that, I probably would just withdraw it. I said that kind of off the top of my head. I mean, most of these guys are just blowing so much smoke, and Gravel seemed to be almost the most far-out guy, so that's sort of what attracted me to him. But like I said, I don't know a lot about his policies. I'm going to wait till this all gets sorted out, gets close to the primaries. I mean, so far, obviously, the person that has the most sensible policies, has the most progressive agenda, is Dennis Kucinich. But he ain't got the big bucks. Probably he's not going to be up there at the head of the Democratic ticket, and will be stuck with somebody like Hillary. And that's what they'll say. Well, you're going to have Hillary or Giuliani? Well, I guess that's an easy choice. I want to talk about Giuliani when we get back. Hey, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Take our top of the hour break, second hour of the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe sitting in from Detroit, Michigan. You call us, 800-989-1480. It's the Nova M Radio Network. Go Stones! Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe here with you, broadcasting from Detroit. Mike, a bit under the weather. If you heard him on Friday, his voice was a little rough. Got even rougher. Hopefully he is sleeping. Mike, If you're listening to this show, go to sleep. Getting a lot of email, people wishing you well and speedy recovery. A lot of nice notes from you at, or for me, rather, at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And, but all of them would like to see you back, right? So come on back. 800-989-1480 is our phone number here at Nova M Radio Network. And a caller a while back was talking about the idea. In fact, he said that he would pledge $1,000 to the Cindy Sheehan independent candidacy if Nancy Pelosi did not carry out her constitutional responsibilities and begin impeachment proceedings against George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Alberto Gonzalez, and others that have committed all these crimes against the Constitution, high crimes and misdemeanors. And then he called Pelosi's office and told her that, he told staffers there, that he, in fact, will give $1,000 not to the Democratic Party, because that's their strategy. They just want to kind of go along. Everybody's disliking Bush. His popularity is down, 28%, and there's always a margin of 3%, so it could be 25%. Who are those 25%? I just talked to a guy here that works here, that's on the air. I work in a complex of three radio stations here in Detroit. And he said, what are you talking about? I said, the Bush crime family. And he laughed. He said, what have they done? He's the greatest president we've ever had. I mean, you figure, who are these people, right? Anyway, Captain Kirk, who listens to me here in Detroit as well, said Cindy Sheehan's unofficial campaign website, so that's already happening, is SheehanForCongress.us, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, for Congress.us, so you can go to that. All right, let me see if I can easily, I'm not the best with technological stuff. I'm like a 20th century guy, but I got it back up here. All right, so the next thing I have to do is press some more buttons and get one of you on the air. 800-989-1480, Peter Werby in for Mike Malloy. And let's go to Josh. He's in Elmira, New York, and he's listening on the Internet. Josh, hey, it's Peter Werby.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, what I want to talk about is the fact that I think the reason they're not going for impeachment is because the Democrats themselves don't really fully grasp the Constitution. Here in New York State right now,
yeah,
we've got this legislation up that's basically video game bans video games. You know, they want to restrict sales so that anybody who sells a video game to a minor is going to go to jail. And this is something that our Democratic government governor, Elliot Spitzer, has already said he's going to sign off on.
Now, wait a minute. This couldn't be just across the board. This has got to be like violent ones.
Anything mature rated, they want to ban sale to minors. And the thing about that is, most people who play video games are adults. The average video game player is 33.
So what's the problem?
The problem is
well, I don't like censorship, don't get me wrong. But in other words, there's a lot of things that we don't let kids drink. We don't let kids.
That.
Okay.
They also want to try to set up their own board that vets the video games that can be sold in New York State. And they want to truthfully, technology is already built in.
Well, how about this? How about this? New York's got a lot more problems other than video games. I think we both agree on that. Thank you, Josh.
Okay.
I appreciate your call. Here is Gary. Gary's listening on Sirius. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Gary, hi. It's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show.
Good to have you sitting in for Mike. I appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
I'm calling regarding the Cupertino call about Cindy Sheehan.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with him. A few days back, Bill Press, actually about a week and a half or so, asked how many people would support her, yes or no, and call in. And I'd say the majority of them would support her, or that called in to him. And he was a little surprised. I called in and I told him, I'm not from California right now. I live in Wyoming. But I'd support her financially, and I'd also take a week off and go door to door for her.
Wow.
And,
that's support.
You know, I think that, they need to send a message. Something happened this afternoon, interesting, on another program also. Some lady called in about, taking and buying balls of different sorts and sending them to Congress and for a message. And it's interesting. I had the same thought, a week or two ago. And I think not only doing that, but taking and marking on the envelope, balls for Congress, and, you know, put a note inside it, you know, don't even send brand new ones, those that aren't perfect in perfect condition are still better than what they have now.
Well, listen, Gary, here's our problem. I mean, this whole system works on blackmail on different levels. And part of the blackmail is, like, I live in a district. I don't live in John Conyers' district. I live north of that. And Sander Levin, the younger brother of the chair of the Senate Armed Forces Committee, Carl Levin, Sander Levin. So Sander Levin is just one of these go-along Democrats. He's liberal enough, you know, but he's never going to go for impeachment or anything like that. So say there's somebody running against him. Well, he's had some conservative opposition. So the way we are always blackmailed is, and you know how it goes. They say, well, if you vote for the Green candidate, if you vote for the Independent candidate, that's going to put this guy named Papa George, who's run against Sander Levin any number of times, and so we'll have a right-wing conservative representing us, and that would maybe erode the Democratic majority in the House. So we're always blackmailed, I'm often wary of how we're even going to get out of it. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Aaron. Aaron is listening in Delaware on XM Satellite Radio. Aaron, it's Peter Werbe on the Mike Malloy Show. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing good.
A great job.
Well, thank you.
You had a caller a couple calls back saying, what should we do? What should we do? Should we be radical revolutionaries or should we be more middle of the road? And you wanted some responders to that. So I'm
sure,
going
please.
To respond to that.
Yeah.
I think what people should keep in mind when they're voting is that as a rule of thumb, there are two classes of people. There's the working class, the owning class. And I think the owning class, everything they do is to take the wealth that the working class made and keep it for themselves.
That's right.
And I think that people need to keep that in mind when they're voting. And all these other side issues that seem to spring out of nowhere are just little tricks that they use against us to keep our mind off the ball, keep our eye off the ball.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I think people should just realize that voting.
It's called television. It's called mindless, all sorts of mindless activities. I'm for I spend a lot of time in my mind and using my intellect. So I like a lot of mindless activities. But when it becomes to dominate your life, which it does with so many Americans, I certainly think, that's where we're looking at our problems.
Exactly.
Exactly. All right. Thank you. Appreciate it, Aaron. Thanks for calling. And let's see. I had an email here I wanted to get up. JR writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The way I see it is there's no way we'll ever be able to take our country back until we have public financing of elections. Every issue that we complain about could be taken care of if we only have public financing. The war would not have happened if we had a public financing in place. Think about it. No military contractors involved in our elections. Well, yeah. I mean, that on one hand, you may say that's a little oversimplified, but it certainly is a key to the corruption of the political system itself. It always has been. You know, maybe I shouldn't mention this guy. He's on a different network. It's an old colleague of Mike and mine that was on the IE America radio network with us. And he wrote a book about the Supreme Court decision that actually never happened that allowed the same constitutional protections to bear on corporations that were supposed to be reserved to individuals. Previously, it was a crime in many states for corporations, companies, for instance, to try to influence elections. Can you imagine that? I mean, Michael Moore, when he had a showing of Sicko, he invited 900, he had the names of 900 healthcare lobbyists. You understand that? 900 people at a minimum are involved in lobbying Congress on behalf of these healthcare giants who are dedicated not to our health, of course, but we didn't even need Sicko to tell us that, but to lining their pockets with our money. That's more of looting, as we were talking about earlier. All right, our music's up. We got your calls coming back after that. The number is 808. I keep giving my number here in Detroit. 800-989-1480. It's Nova M Radio Network. I'm Peter Werbe in for Mike Malloy. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Peter Werbe broadcasting from Mike. I'm here in Detroit, Michigan, taking your calls at 800-989-1480. We're talking about a lot of stuff. Hey, one of the things that Bush is desperately playing on our emotions again about, you know, the fear card once again, is the whole thing, if we don't defeat them there, they're going to come here, right? You know, one thing that's been lost in all the cockamamie things that the Bush mob said with lead up to the Iraq war, you know, all the lies, one of the things that they had was that they had these missiles that they were going to put on ships and they were going to float off the coast of the U.S. and that Iraq could actually attack the United States with these weapons that they were developing. And now Bush, every time he talks about Al-Qaeda in Iraq, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. This is an organization. Now, this is pretty interesting because there really is not an organization called Al-Qaeda in Iraq. The actual name of the group is Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia. And those of you who've listened to the show, that have listened to Progressive Radio, know that, of course, that he's distorting reality once again, essentially lying as usual. How do you know Bush is lying? His mouth is opening. How do you know any of the rest of the Bush Co. mob is lying? Their mouths are open. They're saying things. It's easy. In the old Soviet Union, people would read Pravda and Izvestia, and Americans would say, how are you reading that stuff? It's all lies. He says, oh, we know what's true. And they say, how? I said, well, you just know the opposite is. So, in fact, one of the things that I would suggest would be, don't you know the old Who song, Won't Get Fooled Again? Now, come on. I mean, let's be kind here. Probably most of you listening to Progressive Radio weren't fooled by the Bush lies in 2002 and 2003. But great numbers of American people were. They believed all this hoorah. I didn't believe it. I knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. I knew that Saddam Hussein was not involved in 9/11. I knew that the army of Iraq was virtually non-functional and represented a threat to no other country in the region. And how did I know it? You know, was I over there? No. I read enough stuff, even in the mainstream paper, mainstream papers and websites and what have you, the MSM, the mainstream media. They were telling, little bits of it snuck through, and you really kind of, weighed which made more sense. Well, it made a lot more sense that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So anybody that made the effort knew there were none. And the other people were just involved in what Noam Chomsky calls willful ignorance, that they saw guys on television with suits on and uniforms on, and they believed what they said. And it wasn't just on Fox News. Fox News, forget it. Fox News is for idiots, the idiots that want to believe that stuff. You know the whole deal. The more you listen to Fox News, the farther you are away from correct information. So forget about that. The important outlets are ABC News, NBC News, CBS News, CNN News. Those are the newscasts that people that are allegedly respectable. Except they were they any different than Fox News? Was NPR, nationalistic Pentagon Radio? No, they all floated the same crap. So what do you do? Well, here's what I would suggest. Now, if somebody comes up to you on the let me put it another way. Somebody knocks on your door and say, "Hi, I'm selling this wonderful new," and you go, "Wait a minute. This guy, he's got to be full of it." You immediately think that. Well, you would be much better off the next time there's a crisis point. And they're going to come. It's going to come maybe soon, maybe in a while, maybe a long time from now. But you know they keep rearing their head. And most of the U.S. wars were based on lies, right? We know that. Well, do you? You know, this war, the Vietnam War, the Panama War, the Grenada War, the Spanish-American War, World War One, it goes on. They all were based on lies, and yet thousands, millions in some cases of people died. Next time you see a guy on television with a suit and a tie and he's talking about we have to go to war, know he's lying. Or let's put it this way: assume he's lying, and then maybe you will find out he's telling the truth. That would be rare, but it might be. But we would do much better off taking it for granted that we're being told lies and then going out and trying to figure, well, is there some truth in this? Rather the opposite, going, they're on television. They got a blue tie, or what are they, red tie. They got a little flag in their pins, or a little flag pin in their lapel. Let's go to Rich. Rich is in Haiti, Missouri, and he's listening on XM. Hey, Rich, it's Peter Werbe sitting in for Mike Malloy.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good. Is it still afternoon there?
For me it is.
Okay.
You know, as far as the WMDs, you never heard about that vault of cheese that Saddam had under his palace.
There you go.
Anyway, you know, as far as reaching people, you've got a number of things that you got to deal with. I mean, there's a number of people who can't afford venues such as XM Radio.
Yep.
The best way to get across, actually getting out to people, is on the local free radio. And, you know, that's a tough go. There's a number of people out there, no matter what you do, they're not going to listen to what you got to say.
It's always true. Unfortunately, Rich, I got to take a break right now. Thanks for joining us. And come on back. We'll get you on the air. 800-989-1480. It's the Mike Malloy Show. I'm Peter Werby on the Nova M Radio Network. Ozzy Osbourne, I love it. Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show on the Nova M Radio Network. Our call-in number, 800-989-1480. Is that Crazy Train? Yeah, it is. Okay, they tell me, yes, it is. Mary, you know, all that music from Ozzy Osbourne and, like, Black Sabbath used to be, you know, like, wow, it's so over the edge. Just sounds like ordinary rock and roll now, doesn't it? Peter Werby in for Mike. Let's see. Mickey writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Failure in Iraq is success. It's Orwellian, but here's my logic. There's a twisted beauty in the logic of what they are doing. Failure is an insurance policy. It will kill two birds with one stone. As long as Iraq is unstable, we will have bases there, and the debt accumulated will cause the breakdown of liberal programs here, fulfilling the conservative dream. We have to remember that as much as these traitors want to make themselves look stupid, they are the smartest of enemies in how they have infiltrated all of our institutions. Gonzalez, for example, would rather make himself an intelligent, educated man look like a total incompetent idiot then give any hint about how they operate. We do live in interesting times. Well, yes and no. I mean, they make out. They're able to loot the national treasury, whether they're successful or not. I mean, they would rather succeed, although the continuing failure just means they can spend more and more of our money. So I said, we have a system based on looting. It's also a military-industrial complex. So the Bush administration, the Bush Co., the Bush crime family is preparing to ask Congress to approve an arms sale package for Saudi Arabia and its neighbors that is expected to eventually total $20 billion at a time when the United States officials contend the Saudis are playing a counterproductive role in Iraq, like letting their citizens become part of Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia. But they don't exactly use that language. Now, on the other, so this kind of got Israel and its supporters up in arms, but the administration has resolved these concerns in part by promising Israel $30.4 billion in military aid over the next decade, a significant increase over what Israel has received in the past 10 years. And there goes our national health plan again. So we've given these, getting up, this, there are two separate aspects to this, right? On one hand, we are going to sell the Saudis and also, let me see, the list of these other people, Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates are going to receive all this equipment and weaponry from the arms sales. Now, this increases the standing of the United States as this military-industrial complex that is the armorer of the world. And as Napoleon said, there's only one thing you cannot do with bayonets, and that's sit on them, which means eventually it all gets used. But if they start destroying each other, that simply means we can send in Bechtel and KBR and Halliburton and what have you to clean up the mess. So it's a racket. It's a scam. And we're financing it all. Although at least, and I don't even, this doesn't pull it out at all, but at least money's inflowing. But we are just giving money to Israel. But Israel says, well, wait a minute. All these Arab nations, many of them which are very hostile to us, are going to get all this armament. So we'll say, it's okay. We're going to give you $30 billion over the next 10 years. Well, I don't want my $30 billion to go to Israel. Do you? Or do you want any of this to go to Egypt or Jordan or whatever, the people that we're still giving billions of dollars to? As I said before, wouldn't you rather have a national health program so that we're all insured? Wouldn't you rather have free college tuition for everyone rather than giving money to Israel and Egypt? I would. How about you? This is one of the biggest scams, the biggest confidence games that has ever been perpetrated on such a large number of people in the history of the planet. I mean, this is looting us. This is taking our productive labor, transformed into wealth, and then stolen from us again by transferring it to these huge corporations that make the world more and more unsafe, guarantee that hundreds of thousands of people are going to perish in wars so that more money can accrue to these already ultra-wealthy people. This is pathology. Yeah, I mean, they're calling them schemers or smart. This is a mad system. This is an insane system that is a juggernaut that rolls along seemingly unstoppable. But I don't know if you've ever seen a juggernaut, these huge prayer carts in India that eventually just run over people in front of us. And it's beginning to run over us. And this can't continue. This cannot continue. The difference is it just going to be all wrecked? Is everything just going to go completely to hell? Or are we going to start grasping our own destiny, have a vision, and make it happen? And many of you who are isolated for politically or even socially, some of you I know even have medical conditions that isolate you, you're saying, me? I got to stand up against a juggernaut? I got to stand up against Halliburton? I have to stand up against the U.S. Army? How am I going to do that? Well, you know, remember how our country got started? Remember how we freed the slaves? Remember the suffragette movement? Remember the socialists and the anti-war and the labor movements before World War I, and which, of course, got squashed by World War I, which is one of the purposes for fighting World War I by the United States, by the way. But remember the labor movement? Remember the anti-war movement of the 1960s? We can do it. We fashioned this all ourselves. We the people. Remember those big letters? Wasn't it some important document? We the people? That's what's got to happen. Do I have any exact way for you to do it? No. But why am I any smarter than you? They just gave me a microphone. That's the difference between me and you. I mean, as many of you, as you've heard tonight, you know, you're just as smart as I am. I'm just as smart as you are. Well, so let's do it, and let's try to figure it out. All right, Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show, 800-989-1480. Let's go to Miami, Florida, and pick up Alan. Alan's listening to WINZ. Alan, hi, it's Peter Werby.
Hi. I just want to say how great it is to hear the things you have to say. And I like listening to you as the mild-mannered Mike Malloy substitute.
Well, I am.
Yeah, that's cool. I want to talk about impeachment, but it's hard to even know where to start. I mean, what really gets me ticked off is when they talk about the political expediency, whether, you know, about impeachment. That's not the issue at all. It's as though the public officials can determine whether or not they're going to go after serious crimes or not, depending upon the electoral calendar.
Right.
The way I look at it, if they do not work on impeachment and to go after the greatest crimes committed in our history of our nation, effectively, we will simply have allowed America as we know it to die, because nobody can ever believe in anything we have to say or show or do in the future. So one way or the other, we kind of have to force them to go that route, whether they like it or not. It's going to be the people to do it. I think at this point, actually, impeachment's about the minimum thing we can do to restore some law and order around here. To actually get a responsive democratic government again is going to require a long-term commitment and focus. Our nation doesn't seem too well-equipped to handle at this moment, but we could give it a start.
Well, you know, Alan, here in Detroit, the city council voted unanimously to support impeachment. And I went to a rally at a local venue, and one of the council people who had introduced it, she said when she goes into her neighborhood, and this is in all, you know, great portions of Detroit are African-American, and so was she, and she said she goes into her neighborhood and she says that she wants to impeach Bush, and her neighbors say, that's all you want to do to him?
Well, so, I have a suggestion how to make this maybe move forward, to put some more pressure on the Congress than we already have, something
tell
practical.
Me.
It's been mentioned before, actually, even I think once maybe before Mike Malloy did this before, but there's some as you said, like what Cindy Sheehan is doing, challenging them, and as you suggested, giving money to Sheehan's campaign or to the Greens. Well, there's a website called switch2green.org with a number 2.
Okay.
That basically says that use your registration as more powerful as much or as much weight or more than a vote, because right now your registration in those states where you can register can say what your position is vis-a-vis the war, vis-a-vis impeachment, because the Green Party already has a public stand on those as to opposing the war and preemptive or preventive war in general, and has been in favor of impeachment since 2003. So I'm thinking that people who are worried about voting, well, voting is certain. You need to vote however you feel you have to at the time. But the registration right now, if there were a couple hundred thousand people who decided to switch the registration to green, it would send a powerful message to Congress to say, okay, jig's up. You're on notice. You've let us down. We now have a place to go that at least says what we would like, the world as we'd like to see it, and start producing it.
All right. Thank
switch
you, Alan.
To green.org with number two.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks
very much.
A lot.
And let's see, here is Craig. Craig is listening to Sirius Satellite Radio in Garland, Texas. Craig, hi, it's Peter Werby on the Mike Malloy Show. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter, how you doing?
Doing great.
I'm with Mike Gravel on the national sales tax, and I've heard several people call in that have been kind of putting it down. I'm not sure if people really understand what a national sales tax is.
Well, I do, and I'm against it, but go ahead. Tell me why you're for it.
Well, somebody mentioned national sales tax, and you responded, oh, yeah, a flat tax. Well, national sales tax is not a flat tax.
Well,
you understand that?
No, well, it's a regressive tax. Pardon me. I'm beginning to sound like Mike was when I talked to him today. It's a regressive tax. I mean, there shouldn't be any sales tax. There doesn't have to be any sales tax. We could have a $50,000 tax deduction. All we got to do is put ultra taxes on the wealthy. Then we don't have, then the common people, the average person, is not going to be saddled with that. All we got to take off, thing called? The payroll tax. I mean, they got a cap on it now of about $90,000. Take the cap off completely, and we wouldn't need any of that. All right, Craig, thank you very much. We're going to take a break, head into our last segment, and I hope you stay with us because got a lot more conversation. In fact, stay with Nova M Radio, and you'll get the best progressive radio available. Call-in number here is 800-989-1480. I'm Peter Werby on The Mike Malloy Show. Final segment on the Mike Malloy Show on the NovaM Radio Network. Peter Werby here with you, broadcasting from Detroit. Now, Mike Malloy, I told you to get in bed and get your rest. He's sending me emails of nice ones that people wishing him get better soon, but thanking him for choosing me as his substitute. But you got to get some sleep, Mike. So you're back here tomorrow. Now that's not going to be clear. We've got one asset here in talk radio. Well, our minds too, but our voices. And when they go, like Mike is having a lot of problems with this upper respiratory infection. So get to sleep, Mike. This is get Kathy, put Molly to bed, and get some rest, because we all want you back. I love to do this, but here, this is my second favorite thing to do. My first favorite is listening to you. All right, here is Ryan in Sydney, Montana. Ryan, hi, it's Peter Werby. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Peter. You sound like an intelligent person, but you are in outer space on some of these things. Free health care and free college. Should I get a free house from the government, or a free car maybe, or...
Well, let's talk about necessities. Now, that'd be okay.
Necessity?
Well, that would be okay. I mean, I'm talking about what's realistically affordable, and we could do that. Because how much money have we wasted in the Iraq War? Do you know?
That's an investment.
Yeah, it is for the oil companies, but not for
no,
you and me.
It's an investment in our security as a country.
Oh, come on. Nobody believes that anymore.
It's the truth, though. It's 100% the truth. The sad fact is that our economy and our society runs on oil, and we have to have secure oil. That's the reality of life that we live in. I'd love it, too, if we could get energy, you know, from the stars, but that's not the reality we live in.
Well, here, one of the things that the war is about is that every country in the Middle East is either neutralized, our ally, or a client state, except for two of them. One is Iran, and the other is Syria. And the idea, of course, was to bring Iraq out of the enemy category, even though, you know, Bush and Reagan and all those guys were all buddies with Saddam Hussein till he didn't serve their purposes anymore. But we don't need oil in the manner that you're talking about. We need oil if we keep, I mean, hey, wasn't it Bush who said we're addicted to oil? Let's get off the addiction.
It's not going to happen. That is a false reality. We live in a society where every good thing you have in your life comes from energy, from oil. The cars you have, the things you eat come from trucks that are moved by oil. That's the sad reality we live in right now. We have to make sure that to secure that. And I think there's nothing wrong with fighting a war to be straight out and honest and say, we need to fight a war for oil. There's nothing wrong with
that. There you go. Well, listen. If that's the case, Ryan, we're totally screwed. I mean, all you got to do is look at any empire historically, from beginning from Rome, going through the Netherlands, Britain, France, all of them. When they expend their energies controlling land way afar from the metropolis where we live, it always winds up to be a disaster. And
would it be a just war if all the people in the United States were starving and there was a country that was hostile to us that had huge amounts of supplies of food? Would it be okay to go to war against them for food if we were all starving to death?
Are you trying to justify a war of the world against the United States?
No, I'm saying...
Well, that's what happened. Ryan, let me get a few more calls in before we go. But, all right, thanks for calling. Now, this is the only... You know, whenever I do something like that, like people say... If Malloy would have been here, he would have reamed him a new one. I, you know, somehow I don't even have the energy for these people. You know, sometimes when people say to me, you know, if a conservative friend of mine said blah, 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 what should I say to him? I say, well, maybe you just say goodbye. I mean, I've sort of run out of energy. I mean, on my Detroit show a couple of weeks ago, and I have a co-host on that program, and this guy said, well, Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11, and she and I mean, neither of us, we couldn't even, garner up the energy to say, nobody believes that anymore. But at least Ryan articulated the core view of what really motivated this war. It's a war for oil, and it's blood for oil. And so his deal is, yeah, we're going to conquer the hinterlands, slaughter the colonials. What the hell? Because we need oil, and the rest of the world be damned. And if we have our soldiers have to come home in baskets as well, what the hell? It's all worth it so we can drive our SUVs, right? Right. Okay. Here's Jake listening to KGOE in Arcata, California. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Going great.
Yeah, so that last caller, you know, just another racist Republican who has no problem slaughtering hundreds of thousands of people just so Halliburton and Exxon can make a few billion more dollars.
Yeah, he sounded like a young guy. Why didn't I say the obvious? See, I can't even think of answers for him anymore. Like, why don't you join the military, right?
Yeah, why don't these Republicans with all their, you know, their big ideas and, you know, big talk, why don't they go join the military? All these guys, they are joining the military. And
well,
you know why.
Some of them did, like Pat Tillman, then his own men shot him in the head, right?
Yeah, how's that? The Bush administration covers up the murder of Pat Tillman. And you know why they did, because this was before the 2004 presidential election, and they didn't want a PR debacle on their hands.
Right.
And Pat Tillman apparently was supposed to come out against the Bush administration upon his return and actually talk to Noam Chomsky, of all people. So I think there's a lot of unanswered questions about the Tillman murder. But real quick about Alberto Gonzalez. Apparently, Jay Inslee, the Democrat from Washington State, he's putting forward impeachment articles against Alberto Gonzalez. And I think that's the only choice we have now. The Congress, they can't do anything because the Justice Department, they're not going to, you know, get a special prosecutor. So the only option we're left with is impeaching Gonzalez.
Yeah, I think at least At least we can start there. And that's not a criminal prosecution. I mean, that's not the kind of thing that, that Bush can pardon him for on the way out. Disgrace him, because the man is a disgrace. Jake, thanks for being our last caller on the Mike Malloy Show. The music's coming up, and whoa, Roman and Jimmy and Brooke, my apologies for stranding you there. I would have liked to have talked to you. Well, here's what I hope. I hope I am not back tomorrow. I hope I am not back tomorrow, because that will mean that Mike is still under the weather. And I know he wants to come back. He's going to be on vacation all next week. I'm going to be doing his show all that time. So let's give some big hope for good health for Mike. And thank you to everybody in Phoenix who made it so easy for me to broadcast from Detroit. Peter Werby saying, thanks for having joined me on the Mike Malloy Show.